another FACT podcast. I'm Dr. Fred Clary, founder of Functional Analysis Chiropractic Technique, a chiropractic technique based on movement and breathing. Well, in today's episode, we have a returning guest, Dr. Michael Christopher from the Buffalo, New York area. The Buffalo Bills just lost a big playoff game, so he's a little saddened by that. The Baltimore Ravens, I'm from Baltimore, they lost, so we're commiserating a little bit. But we thought we'd get away from our commiseration from professional sports and start talking about happiness, what it takes to be happy, those behaviors, those actions one would have to take to be happy. Is happy attainable? Do you deserve to be happy? Something to think about. Are you doing those things that require to be happy? Dr. Mike has a thriving business, a bunch of kids that he's successfully raised or is still raising. And we get into a little bit about what happiness is, or the formula or recipes for happiness. And it might not be totally politically correct, but it's truthful. And, you know, the truth will set you free, an old book said. And I don't know if it'll set you free. I think it gives you the answer, though. And you having to take those steps to march along them will help. So here's an episode on happiness. Enjoy. Well, we have a special treat today on the podcast. We have Dr. Michael Christopher from the Buffalo, New York area. I've known Doc for many, many years. If you've listened to previous podcasts or his podcasts, you know we go back about 200 years and then some. And, have similar views on health and want to educate our patients and the public to different components and modalities that will help them down the road to health and healing and wellness and success. How you doing, Doc?
Doing fantastic, man. I love having time to hang out with you. I mean, it's been too long since our last podcast, our last melting of the minds, sharing of the minds.
Oh, there you go.
Always awesome. Yeah. Like I've said, anyone that hasn't heard us talk, we're, you know, brothers from different mothers kind of thing. Yeah. And I love what happened when we first met. I just thought, I have nothing in common with this guy. This man's out of his mind. My first impression of you was like half terror, half interest. And I just like pushed back going, I don't know, man, I don't know about this guy. And then as I got to know you, I thought, my God, how can we have so much in common? This is amazing. And we developed an incredible friendship. And I think it's one of those things when you meet somebody that is somewhat even in intensity to you. I'm more internalized mind, you externalize yours very well. And I think that's one of the things you taught me was to externalize your passions and your feelings, because you're not one to hold back. You know, you're a great truth teller. You're pretty fearless. And I wouldn't say I was a liar, but I would hold back a lot of how I felt, kept my cards face down a lot in my younger years. It's just kind of how what my environment taught me to do to survive. And you were doing the opposite. And I thought, holy cow. And I thought, you know, that guy's got more guts than me. I don't like that. I got to have more guts than him. So, we got into truth telling missions about each other and in a surrounding. And I think that plays right into today. When you said, you know, you want to talk about happiness, contentment, that kind of thing. I think the search for happiness within humans is a brutal thing to observe. You know, it's rough to watch. And but there's so many answers. There's sets of rules. There's ways of going that I have used personally. I wasn't born smiling. You know, I was, you know, probably average in my contentment. And to see people fall apart, break down, turn to drugs and porn and abuse as a way of trying to just, I don't know, stimulate themselves or try to not feel dead inside is horrifying. And if you and I can do something about that, I know we have. I do it every day in practice. I try to lift people up. I don't blow sunshine necessarily, but I definitely want to give them concrete ideas on how to be at least content. And more than that, because I don't think content is a very fun state. It's okay. It's better than, you know, miserable. But humans are meant to be a little happier than that.
And I think we're supposed to be moving forward, exploring our environment, constantly moving all the time. I just did a little consult session with one of my clients. I do some life coaching and I work with other doctors. But we were talking about some patients that just want to hold on to their label. Now, if you're sad and you're depressed, you know, it's amazing because these people that are sad or depressed can be put into a different situation, and then pretty soon they come become sad and depressed again. It's kind of like the idea if you win the lottery and you give it to a poor person, wait 5 years because it'll be poor again, you know? And so, you know, how much of this is nature? How much of it is nurture for the listening audience? That means how much of it is in your DNA, and how much is in the environment of your teachers, preachers, you know, your environment, your home life, your parents, your siblings, where you live. Right, you know, I know the Buffalo Bills fans, the Bills Mafia was a little upset, and all the Flock gang from Baltimore, we're really kicking ourselves, and you know, they're ready to get rid of a coach that's been putting us in the playoffs every year. And I'm like,
Crazy.
it's more than the quarterback's fault. You know,
Same. Absolutely.
there's
I mean,
more.
you know, Bills fan, I don't think my quarterback has any fault whatsoever. You know, I'm a massive Josh Allen fan, but I think you know, like anything in life, there it's usually multiple factors. One time, sometimes it's one big massive thing, but most of the time, it's a series of things. Like a football team losing, it's a series of things. Sometimes it is the coach, the quarterback, the running back, the defense, blah blah blah. But a lot of times, you have to look and make that analogy to yourself. You know, look over what you might be doing wrong. You know, because one of the things, one of the questions that came to mind when you mentioned this to me. This podcast or this idea was, do we deserve happiness? Because I think that's a massive question, because I have a lot of people saying, well, he deserves to be happy now. He's been through this, or she's been,
Much.
he deserves happiness. And a lot of times I don't, it almost sounds cynical of me, but I think, no, why does he deserve happiness? From doing what? The person hasn't done anything to bring on a state of growth or giving or loving. What are they putting out? What is their value to society? What is their value to themselves? He deserves it because he's been miserable? I don't think so. I don't think you deserve happiness from being miserable. I think you deserve happiness when you're miserable enough to raise up and say, okay, I've been living wrong. How can I straighten this out? And I thought of three basic rules or three basic ideas that I think work for people when they're not doing well. The first thing, and this one's amazing, and I heard this sort of recently, part of this. You and I have always tossed around the idea and this higher belief that the truth will set you free. I fully believe that, okay? But the issue with it is this. Let's
The
say a
truth
person,
can hurt too. The truth can hurt.
oh boy. So let's say a person has been lying, fabricating, and
Yes.
weaseling their life, and they realize this has burnt them and they are sad and they're going to change their ways. So they start telling the truth. One author that I listen to and read a lot said, when you start telling the truth, it creates a fire in you that burns everything in you that's not true. That fire is so painful that it will turn you back into a liar unless you can stand strong through it long enough. And I thought, what an interesting way of saying it, that the truth will set you free, but it'll turn on a fire that burns what's not true in you. And let's say you've been living a life of lies, fabrications, and exaggerations. And now there's a lot of dead wood in you. All that dead wood's ablaze. It's burning you internally, and you have to sit through that. So, what is the answer then? If I'm going to turn in and burn off all this garbage in me that I've made, fabricated over years, to then become a truth teller, to be set free, I think the only way to do that, in my opinion, is to take it slow. So you start telling more truth. You come closer to the truth. And the longer you do that, you start to have a small blaze and you burn through some of the things that you've been doing. And, you know, to tell the truth, maybe stop lying first off. You know, be quiet when you want it. When you're about to tell a lie, don't say anything. Start with something simple like that. And as you do this, I think the best of all outcomes is the result of telling the truth. When you tell the truth, the outcome, not immediately, sometimes immediately, other times it may take a while for that outcome to then show itself. Because let's say you meet someone who historically has been known for not being truthful, and you see them trying to change their ways, you realize, well, they're probably still in a state where they're capable of telling some lies. So you don't have to, you can't trust everything, but the more truth you start hearing from them, the more faith you have in them, and the more you can build a relationship with them, because you need some belief in that this person is somewhat honest, or why do I want to continue a relationship with this person? So to me, that's rule number one, tell the truth in slow motion. If you've been in a series of lies for a long time, get that fire burning, deal with the suffering, and then see the outcomes. And it starts to become very, very motivating over a series of days, weeks, months, whatever it might take, depending how thick and how deep you've been into this. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, let me play devil's advocate, because you know I'll do that. What if they don't know it's a lie? What if they think, well, I can't lose weight because it's my genes and my whole family were big boned. I'm still waiting to find a big bone person, but you know, they're big bones, you know, might find one or two in the weight room, but that's about it. But you know, I've always been this way. Or maybe, you know, I emotionally eat. No, you emotionally eat because you were traumatized. Some horrible thing happened to you as a kid. And that's the truth, but you can't get to that truth because it's so horrible. What do you say to those kind of people? You know, it's like, I'm holding my weight, and I trigger warning for anyone out there, but what if I was raped? You know, if I'm a woman, if I'm a man, I don't want to look attractive, right? So I'm eating to protect myself. How do we deal with those people? Because I get those in my office a lot.
That's where I turn to community.
Okay.
I think you start to surround yourself. Imagine a person who is in my and your company at the same time, and they say that they're big boned. They're going to look at you and go, this guy probably knows about building muscle. They're going to look at me and say, this guy knows how to probably run and starve off weight because he likes to climb around in the Rockies. And that might be just enough for them to say it with some reserve, right? They say, well, I'm big boned. I can say to you, well, we can do a lot of calculations on that and do a percentage body fat, muscle mass, and we can see what your bones weigh.
Yep.
We can maybe estimate bone weight. But in a loving way, if they know that we're honest people and that we've had successful lives, maybe they can take the fact that we say, you know, that actually it turns out not to be that true. It turns out that people really aren't big boned. And a lot of people are just, you know, carrying extra weight because they're eating for comfort. And just like the stuff you had said, and maybe then their trauma comes up and then we could counsel on that. So for me, it's a lot of community and surrounding yourself with the right people. If your parents, teachers, and peers were all of a certain caliber, and you've never done anything to push yourself, you're not reading good books, you're not consulting other mentors in your life, you're going to be stuck in that world. Parents, teachers, and peers. You and I have gone over that. It's a Tony Robbins thing. Love Tony Robbins. He said that in a tape series that you gave me in like 1990. And that stuck to me because I love my parents, teachers, and peers.
Not Scotch tape for people. Listen, there was an analog era before the digital era.
You're right. Those were cassettes.
Cassettes.
So I think, okay, parents, teachers, and peers, I love them, but do I want to repeat their lives? They didn't want me repeating their lives.
That's right.
Don't live this life. Shoot bigger, right? Mm-hmm. My mom, the same thing. So I had supportive parents in one way. They didn't have the tools necessarily, but they did have the basic premise. And I said, yeah, okay. They've taken me this far. I'm going to have to it's time to be an adult now, realize my parents are people, and I'm going to go to the next place. It meant leaving some friends behind. It really did. One of my close friends, at that point in time, I would say was a pathological liar, right? You couldn't trust him. I mean, he wasn't a terrible person, but it was just really got old after a while. And I thought, I'm growing beyond this guy, and I'm going to have to leave him in the background because I'm not doing him any good. He's certainly not doing me any good. I've tried to get through to him. He doesn't want to listen. And, you know, you just fade that person out of your life. And sometimes that means not having anyone in your life. Fortunately, I had some good friends, and it was right around the same time I met you, actually. And I thought, well, this guy's, I'm going in this path. if this is a motivated individual, let's go. You know, let's just go to the next place. So for me, that's where a loving, confrontational slash tough love comes in. And it's got to be done gently. People don't want to hear that their 25-year-old excuse factory that they have is actually a fallacy, and that they're going to have to look in the mirror and go, no, I'm a little lazy. I'm delusional. I'm, you know, damaged. And it's going to be painful to grow. Growth hurts. Some growth hurts. Some growth you can do and just laugh your head off the whole time. You and I have grown in pain and we've grown in laughter, you know, that's for sure. So I guess that's how I would answer that. Surrounding yourself with people that are loving, caring, truthful. And if you don't have those in your life, they're on YouTube. They're in books. I mean, some of the greatest authors have changed my life. You know, I didn't have to get to know them personally. If I ran into them, you know, I would say, thank you. Right. And move on. What am I going to do? I don't really have a friendship with them. I have a connection to them in a, you know, in a different way.
And so let's stick with that. The ideas of community and happiness, like when I'm working with a client or a patient, or even my kids, you know, if they sound like they're depressed and or angry or lonely and they're not happy and joy filled, I'm like, well, who are you hanging around? That's important. Yeah. Because, you know, we are, you know, the average of the five people we spend the most time with. And that's who we are. So if they're not happy people, you're not going to be, well, I don't know any happy people. Well, don't then move on. Like you said, sometimes you're going to have to cut ties, and you don't want to spend major time with people that their happiness is very minor to them in life. Their joy is very minor to them. Their passion for life and living and moving forward is very minor. You want to find people that that's a major factor of their lives, and then spend major time with them. Like you said, and if you're by yourself and you're cutting ties to friends, like you said, books, tapes, you got YouTube now. You know, there's other people out there that can help motivate you, but you can't stay in your own poop and expect to, you know, not smell.
You make a great point in that. For me, I had a friend, different friend actually, and we jokingly called him kind of a low dose person, meaning you can only be around him so long, and bad things started happening to you, you know, and dragged you into things. You know, you can be around him a little while. It was fun, interesting, and I'm a pretty loyal person, so I don't really like to just trash people and turn my back and walk away. So for me to low dose people was a better answer. You know, for me, that worked for me. You know, that was my way of moving on. There's only really one friend that I really let go of completely. Everybody else was just like, you know, and then a lot of times they caught up later, you know, 5 years later, this person decided, hey, maybe in my absence, if I can give myself any credit, I don't even know if I should, maybe in my absence, they felt a sense of loneliness and had to reflect on themselves and say, you know, maybe I need to grow. Look what Mike did. He's kind of moving in an interesting direction. You know, if there wasn't too much jealousy or anything, it was just simple. Just, you know, hey, and then they catch up to you later. I've had that happen a few times. I saw a person 5, 10 years later, and they turned into a really amazing adult from, you know, and I'm talking in my late teens, yeah, early 20s, you know, and they started to grow. And then you can foster that, re-meet, and awesome, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. I've run into people later. I'm like, that person was a miserable SOB. Now they're doing fantastic. Yeah. And, you know, you talk to them and they've changed their lifestyle, what they do, their habits, things have changed. Because, you know, you can't, if you say, I need to be happier, you know, I want more joy in life. Well, you can't do the same things you do that gave you the formula you use, the recipe you use to give you your emotional state you have now, which is negative and unwanted. You can't use that same recipe to get a different, you know, result. It won't work. You'll get the same results.
One of the things I get into too is this concept of being happy. Like I said, people, you know, someone says they deserve to be happy. I think that the way for me to be happy is through achievements, and they could be small things. I'm not talking about getting PhDs and everything, big things, just smaller things. And I think when someone tries to get happy or tries to be satisfied or content in life without achievements, any of those options I think are dangerous, right? If I'm going to get happy right now, right this second, I can start drinking alcohol. I can start doing drugs. I can surf porn. I can do all this stuff that is distracting, damaging in the long term, perverse, and I know is wrong. Or I can set a goal, and maybe even a small goal, something that makes me proud of myself. Like, I'm going to cut down my carbs seriously this week. And then over the next month, I want to drop 5 pounds of belly fat. Okay, then I do it. I'm so happy when I reach that goal. It's maybe a medium-sized goal. For some people, that's really hard. Other people, that's really easy, depending on your comfort and food ratio. But for me, it's when you try to be happy without achievement, you're going to end up in a world of hurt, because anything in that realm I find to be dangerous.
I think the safe spacers are going to be upset at you, so you're probably going to, you know, be doxxed or something. But I think you're right when you say, and it sounds harsh, but it's true. You know, what have you done to deserve to be happy? Mm-hmm. And that could be your diet. You know, and say, do you understand, you know, that you make the happiness neurotransmitters, the neurohormones in your brain, out of protein? You know, they're not made out of carbs, you know? And I said, so how's your protein? Because if it's a choice between making, you know, dopamine or serotonin and, you know, your body continuing to exist for the next 24 hours, I think your innate intelligence of the body is going to choose survival. And you shouldn't be in survival in 2024 if you're in a first world country like America. You know, you have access to protein, you know. So what have you done? Are you exercising to get those endorphins going and to get good circulation? So you get those little, you know, inborn made opioids. You know, everyone's on the opioid epidemic. They're taking painkillers. Well, we make our own and it's safe, you know. You can go get them, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, and exactly.
So what have you done to deserve to be happy? Have you changed the music you listen to? Have you changed the books you read? You know, I'll ask someone and say, tell me the books you read last month. 1, 5. What inspiring movies? Me and Belinda and Lily came home, the freshman in college. We watched a movie about a woman that in her 20s had tried to swim from Cuba to Key West. No one's ever done it. And when she turned 60, she said she was going to do it. Open water swim, you know, no cage. She did it. It's a great movie. I think it's called Nadia or something like that. Wow. She was a very famous open swimmer, champion open swimmer in the late 70s. She came back at age 64 and did it.
Wow.
You have to watch that movie. It's amazing. And it's a little pain in the ass because I saw myself in her, because she pissed people off with the truth. You know, she would look at him in the face and say, why are your goals so low? You know, why don't tell me I can't do it? And of course, you know, she had a doctor or someone told him it's impossible for any human to do it. And that's all she needed, you know. But can you imagine that, you know, her idea, her benchmark for what brings happiness was really high.
Yeah.
And there's some people that, you know, they watch, you know, a Friends episode and that makes them happy. And I'm like, oh, that ain't going to last long. That's like a candy bar. 15 minutes done, you know. Exactly. What are you working on? Are you working on your relationship? Are you and your spouse getting along, or your significant other getting along? What are you doing to foster that every day? What are you doing to learn every day if you're young and you're a student? If you're a professional, you know, are you doing stuff to make yourself so valuable in your job that they want to keep you? And if they can't see that, are you looking at other places where you can add value to the marketplace? What are you doing every day, like you said, so you deserve happiness?
Exactly. Yeah. One of the concept you have right there, when you said value, it brings me on to another thing I took some notes on as we were preparing for this this concept here. I thought to myself one time, people say, well, find out what you're passionate about and do what you're passionate about. And I think that's, on the surface, sounds great. And I know that's worked for a lot of people. But some people can't seem to find what their passion is. And there's another way of going that I think is interesting. Imagine if you found out, instead of what you were passionate about, you discovered what you were really good at. What makes you unique? And let's say you knew that. Some people don't know what that is about them. Other people might know, oh yeah, I'm really good at this, but you know, I don't know. It's not, I'm not passionate about it, but I'm good at it. Well, imagine if you got even better at it and you said, okay, I'm good at this. I'm going to become really good at this. Maybe I don't love it, because I grew up in a very practical world. I didn't get to chase my passions as much as I did chase more what I think I could do. You know, I didn't shoot for the stars when I was a kid. I really just said, okay, I think I can do that. Yeah, I think I'm capable of that. I'm pretty good at the basic premise of that. I could probably go further with that. So imagine if you said, okay, I'm going to get really good at this thing that I'm already a little good at, because I have like a pre-existing ability. And you got so good at it that everybody looked at you and said, wow, you're amazing. So you got a lot of love, conditional love, but you got a lot of love. And then people saw you as valuable. That's what cued me into this when you use the term become valuable. So now this person has this skill set and they're valuable, people telling them how amazing they are. And then it turns into a career. So then they're rewarded financially. You can't tell me that that person at that point isn't somewhat passionate about that. I think your passion can grow from mastering something that you're initially already good at. To me, that's one way of going. Okay. The other way of going in the same area would be to discover what your passion is. Okay. So you can do that, or you can discover your passion. And the way to discover your passion is you think about what gives you energy when you do it. What, while you're doing it, you don't even know what time it is. And thirdly, you would do it even if you weren't getting paid for it.
Yes.
Right. Now, when I did this, that was an actual thing I did. I sat for hours at a group meeting with that concept. And we tossed around words, got a whole list of words to pick. And when I was done, they said, why don't we get three words? Okay. So mine was to teach, inspire, and heal. And I know you're probably in that same category. That's why we get along so well. And I thought to myself, if I could heal people, inspire them, and teach them, I would do that for nothing. I mean, I don't care. And it, you know, it doesn't matter. So why not become really good at that? Maybe I'm a little bit natural at some of those and not others. I think you're more inspirational based. I think you have all three of those. But relative to me, I think inspiring people, I'm not a blower sunshine guy as much as some people, but I definitely love to instruct and teach people. I love when someone comes to an understanding about a complex concept that I could share with them and their mind just blows. It's like, oh, wow. That's really something. That when I see somebody react to something like that, it really gets me. I'm like, this is great. This person, I just brought them up a notch from their level of misery, maybe, or whatever. So in summary, I think there's two things. You find out what you're passionate about and you pursue it. But if you don't know what you're passionate about, what are you good at? Can you enhance that to the degree that you're given so much love and admiration? And then financial reward, that it becomes something that grows into your passion.
Oh, absolutely. And to clarify, like you said, you don't have to be paid for it. What would you do? And there's a lot of people understand, you know, you're a fireman or a trash collector or whatever you are, you know, God bless all those jobs. But maybe you have a hobby and you like photography and you photograph birds. You know, maybe find a way, how can you transition that in to making some money on the side, you know, so you can do it more. You can do it more. You want to lean into those things that make you happy, but you don't want to be like the safe space society where everyone deserves to be happy. And I know it sounds harsh, but you're not using a formula that works. You know, if you're around miserable people all the time, if you're eating like crap, you don't exercise, you have all these issues, if you constantly are, you know, just bathing in your own, you know, malaise, then guess what? You don't deserve to be happy because you're not doing those things to get you happy. And that's like people who eat like crap and then want to take medications so they can lose weight, right? It's like that formula is, like you said, dangerous. It's going to be shallow. whatever happiness will not be long-standing and lasting. And you're using the, you're actually fooling your brain a little bit that this is real. You know, it's not real. It's not long-standing. It's shallow and it's quick. And that type of happiness doesn't last. And people bounce around jobs, right? They bounce around relationships. They bounce around geography, right? They try to move and find happiness. You know, the problem is when they move, they follow themselves to the new place.
You brought yourself to where you just went. Like one of the things that I caught from you early on too, when we first got to know each other, and I didn't process this till more recently. I heard recently that there was a correlation between meaning and happiness. And like people would, I've run into people in practice, and I'm sure you do, that are depressed, and they'll say, you know, they get this sense that they don't think life has much meaning.
Mm.
But okay, well, yeah, through meaning, there's a relationship between meaning and happiness. But one of the things to have meaning, and I think for some people, they're going to say, well, that's unfortunate, is responsibility. Now you think about it. You have children. I have children. The most responsible I've ever felt was when my first daughter was born. I thought, my God, okay, I got to keep this child, not just alive. I have to keep this child in a safe environment, healthy, somewhat content. I want to be a better man. I want to be a better father, or a father, you know, for the first time. And I just, children made, increased my level of responsibility a massive amount. It felt very, almost overwhelming to me at that time. And then I also thought, I have more meaning because I have more responsibility. And for people that I don't have much meaning, they say there's no meaning in life. A lot of them have shirked responsibility.
Ooh.
Right? Like if you say, okay,
oh no, you're dead on, dead on.
I can't handle this big job, so I'm going to take a smaller job.
Yes.
I can't handle the relationship because intimacy is scary. So I'm just going to, you know, live alone. I really don't want to have children because, God, they're a pain in the ass, right? So my God, they're expensive and they're this and they're this. Well, all that stuff, the expense, the responsibility, the fact that they can be a pain in the ass, all of that stuff says, well, I have more responsibility, but what happens? Your life has more meaning.
Mm-hmm.
There's days I get out of bed and I have a full day of patients ahead of me. And I think to myself, wow. And part of me wants to live small that day. I'm like, oh my God, I got to go to work and get everybody to feel better physically, mentally. I got to talk and explain everything. And I just, and this is me like 5 minutes out of bed, you know, rumbling into the shower. And what's funny is I usually don't drive into work that way. It wears off that quick, thank God. And the worst it's ever been is I had to walk in with the first patient, look at that person, and it disappears, thank God. And I'm on board again because I know this is what I meant to do. And I'm thankful and thrilled that I have that much meaning, you know, that I go into work and it feels like a meaningful thing, but it is a responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, being a doctor of any type, I don't care if it's brain surgery, rocket science. If you're an airplane mechanic and you're saving 250 lives every time you bolt the screws on properly, or if you're a chiropractor, because people come in not just with simple back pain, but back pain that's a referral from prostate cancer and bone cancer, and you're the only one that they're listening to because they can't stand their medical doctor, so they're ignoring everybody else. And you know inside, you're the voice and you're the doctor in that person's life. You're the one that has to diagnose that disease. That's a sense of responsibility. And man, that's a lot of meaning as well. So for people I know that say, well, life is meaningless, and they just kind of stare into a void of nothing all day, and they try to fill that with material goods and all the other horrifying things, you tell them, you know, and it's a rough thing to hear. You talk about people wanting to run into a safe space. When you tell somebody, even in the most loving way, that they've shirked all responsibility, and that's why they don't have any meaning, and that's why their life feels like it's meaningless. And the truth is, it is kind of meaningless. They're not living a delusion. If you don't have anything to get up for, anybody depending on you, how are you supposed to get up and do anything or feel like my life has meaning? If you disappeared, who would miss you? Because you never really lined up an intense personal interrelationship with anybody and an intimate sort of relationship.
And would those people, and this is the way I see it too, the first people that they shirk their responsibility toward is themselves. It's themselves. Get up and get moving. This body's made for movement. Dopamine's made for movement. It's a happiness hormone. Nope, I'm going to not take care of my health because it doesn't have meaning. Well, you're right, because you're not giving yourself any meaning. You're not valuing yourself.
Yeah, and on a cellular level, your body says if it doesn't exercise, if it doesn't move enough, on a cellular level, your body's saying we have no reason to be alive.
Yep. So
So
start breaking down.
it's one of the things I love about Mark Sisson and his, book, The Primal Blueprint, is he went to anthropologists and he said, what is enough movement for the human frame? What, how did we move around for the first 165,000 years or whatever, every number you want to come up with? And what you realize is give yourself a physical meaning, not just the emotional and intimate meaning that we just spoke of. And how do you do that? Well, move the body. We now know that hope chemicals, they're referring to them as, come out of muscles when we contract muscle. So we have to contract muscle, and muscle is your second heart, right? Your heart is four chambers of muscle that contract and move blood all different directions. Your bicep, your quadricep, your glutes are little chambers of muscle that move blood. So it's muscle pumping blood. Your heart's is sort of somewhat autonomic, automatic. Your muscles are a little bit more voluntary, unless you're just freezing, then they'll shiver even if you don't have the ability to get up.
They'll move on
But
their own. And you were talking about, physical movement. Well, I'm hurt, Dr. Fred. I got this. Or are you moving your mind? Are you moving your mind? That you have to move your mind first, before you can move your body. I'm going to get up and go for a walk. But your mind was moving on it, that this is a good idea. Are you moving your mind? Are you studying new languages? Like, our house is crazy these days. We have Swahili and Italian going and Russian, and you can hear anything at any time, coming into the living room. And so you have all these beautiful languages. Our minds are moving. I'm constantly, reading material and articles, and oh, this is interesting. I'm gonna study this out this weekend. I didn't know that they're gonna clone Tasmanian tigers again, and it's like, does it have anything to do with my profession or hobbies? No, but it's something I don't know about. Now I do, and it just, is your mind moving? Or are you eating junk food? Meaning, you're reading easy books or comics, or you have the TV on and you just have mindless stuff that doesn't contribute anything. Well, I just don't want to think. Well, that means you're lazy and that you're just allowing your body to die. Believe me, just like you said, responsibility. If you take responsibility for your own thinking, sometimes that helps. Like, there's times I'll turn off a movie or I'll walk away. I'm like, nope, I got to skip this. I just, it's probably a good drama, but I don't want that negativity right now.
Absolutely. I've done it myself. I've done it myself. Walk away from some form of media that's just so negative. And one of the things that I think people don't realize is that, and this is scientifically validated, it isn't like I'm, sort of, extrapolating here. Every thought you have creates a chemical message in your body to turn on or turn off a whole series of different reactions that feed themselves all the way into the tissues deep in your body. So if I have a positive or a negative or a fear-based or an anger-based thought process, it's going to create a biochemical shift. And it's thought that that is designed for you to best survive in the primal environment. So if you're angry, it turns on the lumbar spine and the legs because you're going to charge at something because you're mad. Something irritated you. If you're in fear, you're going to turn on the shoulders and neck and the jaw to guard your artery from predators. And then those are just the big emotions. Imagine all the other ones, jealousy, some of the nastier stuff, deceit. When you lie, what happens? I mean, FBI and CIA agents can look at you, ask you questions, and know by body language, by inspiration, by skin color, by changing body position, if you're lying, by comforting yourself, like crossing arms, all this kind of stuff. That's externally. And those are big things. I move my arms this way, I move my arms that way. Imagine the biochemistry of constantly lying. What that does to
And lying to yourself. It's not lying to others. You know, like I said, you know, oh, you know, I'll start working out tomorrow. Or, you know, I'm going to sign up for that course. Or, you know, I'm going to talk to my boss about a raise or a different job assignment. Or, you know, I'm really going to talk to my spouse about what I really want. Or I'm going to put up some boundaries with my significant other or with my kids or whatever. Communicating fairly and clearly. I'm going to lie to myself by saying I'm going to do that when you know you're not going to do it. And what does that do? I mean, I really think that our thoughts affect every cell of our body. You know, it's like what drives you. And that's why you see these people that either win the lottery and or they're put in a perfect environment and they still end up, you know, on the wrong side of the tracks. Why? Because every cell of their body is not set up for happiness and joy. Every cell is set up for, you know, misery. And your body will start looking for it. Your nervous system is like a homing pigeon. It's like, you know, a GPS on a missile that's shot. You know, it will look and find and filter negativity. Oh, that person's negative over there. I'm going to go talk to him instead of the five positive people over here. You know, they walk into a gym and they're like, oh, it's so busy here. I got to wait for equipment. Well, what were you going to do anyway? You're going to sit and wait at home watching Netflix. You can wait that 5 minutes for that piece of equipment.
Years ago, that happened to me. I was in a gym. It was crowded. This is out in Minnesota and we lived there. And the only thing available was the UBE, the upper body exerciser. Yes, exactly. And I thought to myself, everybody, no one gets on this thing. This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. I gotta get going. I'm looking at my watch and thinking, all right, I'll be the clown who has to get on this thing and embarrass himself, pedaling with his arms, whatever. I got on that thing and I fell in love with it. I felt like Rocky Balboa. I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm throwing punches. I'm pulling and pushing. This thing is exhausting. I couldn't believe how much I was out of breath. In like 5 minutes, I could barely breathe. I kept then I said, okay, I got to turn the resistance up and down in this. So I went easy, then I went hard, then I went easy. Then I had to take a walk around. And part of me, as I'm walking around the little track that was in the gym, goes, I hope nobody gets on that thing. I want to go back and do another set. And I did another set. And I walked out of there kind of proud of myself. I thought, you know, I turned kind of a negative situation into a positive. I just learned how the upper body exerciser works, how I'm all pumped up. I had a tank top on. I'm thinking, oh my God, my delts are popping out. I can't believe this thing actually works. Why doesn't anybody use it? Probably because everybody had the same rotten attitude I had with nobody, this thing, it's dumb, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I realized a boxer should probably use this thing because of the exhaustion of the arms. And I don't own one, but every once in a while, I think I got to get one of those. You know, I use resistance cords to do similar movements and stuff, but, and I box with weights in my hands and stuff. So I'm doing similar things, all coming from the idea that, you know, the upper body, training the upper body with, you know, battling ropes is a nice way to get some aerobics from the top of your body, not just your legs all the time.
Oh, absolutely. Little side UBE story. When I worked in physical therapy in Annapolis, Maryland for a little bit in undergrad, they had one of those and we would rehab stroke exercise patients. And these stroke, nobody wanted to get on that because I would tie their hands in. And I would give them and say, you got to go this speed, this rate. And they'd be able to use it. The people that use this, you know, terrible looking, hard piece of equipment, makes you look silly, they're the ones that got used to their arms again.
Oh, I bet. That's cool to hear it.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a lot easier to grab a dumbbell and move it to the side. And so, you know, sometimes what we think, again, our filter, what we think is correct is absolutely wrong, you know? And
well, yeah, when I thought about the UB after that first workout ever on it, I remember going home thinking, well, running is natural. Pedaling a bike isn't necessarily natural, but it's hiking and going up a hill and down a hill has a pedal-like feel to it. So that's natural. So the bike mimics a lot of natural movements, not less pounding. You get to see more scenery than running and walking when you go. And I love riding bike and I've been on bikes my entire life. But I'm thinking, hey, why not pedal with your arms? Pedaling with your feet's artificial, but it seems to get a lot done. Pedal with your arms. why not? And then that became the, you know, kind of a thing where I've never let it go. Even though I don't own one, I use these same movement patterns using battling ropes and boxing with like 2 pound weights in my hand, stuff like that.
Perfect. Perfect. So, you know, probably should finish up here. But looking at happiness, let me try to kind of put something together, summarize it. And I think for me is, you know, do you have a good recipe to bring you happiness? It's not something that you take a pill, potion, or lotion that's going to get you to. It's not just one behavior that's going to do it. It's a lifestyle. So for me is, do you have a happiness lifestyle? Are you doing those things that make you happy and joy-filled? And like you were saying, sometimes it's telling the truth to yourself. Hey, no, you know, I can't eat those Pop-Tarts every morning and expect to be happy all the time. You know, I can't have these miserable human beings around me and be happy all the time. And sometimes I have to have the tough conversations with people I love and myself to be able to be happy. Happiness is a destination moving forward. It's a combination of events and behaviors we do and activities every day.
Absolutely. One of the things I would say in that same realm is that we have to sort of hit certain like points. One, the biggest point, like we said, when we started out is start to become daring enough to tell the most truth you can tolerate. Burn a little bit internally. Know that's a fire that's going to go off inside and you're going to have to deal with it. People are not going to be happy with you. Be as loving and as caring as you can. Find tactful ways of telling people truthful things. And when you feel like you have to lie, try not to say anything. You know, the old saying, if you can't say something good, don't say something at all. You know, just hold back if you have to, you know, and until you get more skilled at it or until the people in your life become aware that you're now telling truth. You're not burying things. This is a new leaf you've turned over and you still want to be loving. You still love them. Express how you feel about these people as you tell them these things, like the old sandwich technique, like you play in the back, you're screwing up and you say, you know, you're a fantastic, you know, you're fantastic on the phone. I love the way you answer the phone. However, you know, what you said to Mrs. Johnson the other day about so-and-so and so wasn't real great. So I'd hope you wouldn't say that again. And then you end up by saying, you know, you always come to work so professionally dressed. Thank you. So you got two good things and a piece of terrible thing in the middle. You can do that with truth telling as well. You know, give people some truth. Second to that, I think we got to find meaning in life, and that's responsibility. Take some responsibilities on. Take the biggest one you can tolerate and watch how your life gets more meaningful. Get yourself in physical shape because the chemicals coming out of your muscles and the energy you get from taxing and burning out some of the garbage that's in you. One term I want to throw out there, my new favorite term for processed food, ultra processed food, is corporate people chow.
Oh, wow.
Think of that. What's going on? Food chemists in a room, PhDs coming up with new ways of making your tongue happy and then destroying your body, right? So you're tongue eating, you're not body eating, right? You're stuffing food in, your tongue's going dancing, and then the rest of you is, you know, gets nauseous and feels funny for the rest of the day, right? That's corporate people chow. That's not real food. So if you're going to, you know, what's dietary advice? Keep it simple. Eat real food. If you can go pick it off a tree, dig it out of the ground, or it runs past you, it's real. Right. Look at your food. Does it look at least bit alive? Like it was once alive, you know, I mean, does that look like it was once alive? If it's bleeding, sorry, vegetarians and, you know, but that was once alive and you certainly don't have to eat that. If that's offensive to you, I don't care. I'm not telling you, you have to do that by any means. Eat, but eat, you know, if you're eating a carrot and it looks like a carrot, same thing, right? Eating a potato, it's still got dirt on it. Wow, that's great. That potato probably didn't roll around in some chemical bath and preserved it in someone's silo in some weird way.
Well, they put wax over an apple.
Yeah, that's weird. So the weird stuff, it's unbelievable. But try to eat, you know, eat real food. Yeah. And I think if you tell the truth, get yourself in shape, get some responsibility, feel the meaning in your life go up, and you eat real food, surround yourself by people that are in a similar path to you. And if you can't get on, one of the beautiful things about the internet, we can all cry about all the stuff it's done to children and everything else. And I'll cry right with you. It's pretty bad sometimes, but there's also good in it, obviously, right? I mean, many people's lives have been saved by YouTube videos and podcasts, and it's one of the motivations in talking to you. I hope this saves a whole bunch of lives. I hope this raises up a whole bunch of people, and they all just say, "Great, now I have some tools." I mean, and you and I've learned this to some degree the hard way. We didn't grow up in shiny lives. We both had challenging upbringings. I've seen worse than you and I've been through. I'm not saying, oh, I lived in a shoe or something. It wasn't that bad. But, we definitely weren't given a lot of, I didn't grow up in a real positive environment. I had to chisel my way out of that.
So, well, thanks for being here. That was fantastic. I know you got some blogs and you have some great health information out there. If people want to listen to and read some of your stuff, Doc, how can they look it up?
I have a YouTube channel. It's just Dr. Michael Christopher, and you'll see me smiling away in a green shirt. That's me. And we do shorts that are about 30 to 50 seconds long, and then we do longer videos, which are about 8 minutes long. I try to summarize them, and we cover every health topic imaginable. Everything you can imagine, from belly fat to serotonin to hormones and boosting testosterone after age 50, building muscle, stuff I've learned from you. All kinds of topics. I just try to hit the hottest topics, things that interest me, things I go off on tangents. Like you say, you learn about, some kind of strange thing that doesn't appear to have anything to do with what you're interested in, but it stimulates your brain. I throw some of that in there too, but it's mainly obviously health topics, improving yourself, and constant search for growth.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks, Doc. It's good to have you.
Fred, it's always a pleasure. We need to do this more often. And one of these days, I got to come out and see you and see you in person. I haven't seen you in person in years.
Oh, sounds great. Maybe it'll be next year when we see the Bills and the Ravens play in the AFC Championship.
If that happens, we're going.
Yeah, we're going. We'll find tickets. We'll do it
We'll
somehow.
happen. I want to do
All
that.
right. Thanks.